Welcome, everyone, to episode 431 of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor. And for this episode, we welcome Rich Knox from Danko Jones. If you've been following this show for all of these years, you know that Danko Jones has kind of been the white whale that we've always missed out on.
I'm ready.
Let's do it!
Quick reminder that in addition to hosting Signals from Mars, I've also worked behind the scenes helping other podcasters. With over 16 years of experience and more than 1,200 episodes that I've produced or appeared on, I offer podcasting editing, ghost hosting interviews, and repurposing content into viral clips, show notes, transcripts, and social media posts. If you've got a podcast and need help making it sound professional, or if you want to turn your episodes into content that actually grows your audience, I can help. Check out the podcasting services page over at signalsfrommars.com. Just go all the way to the right on the menu. You'll see work with me, hover over that, and you'll see podcast services and sponsorship. Let me help you make your podcast stand out. Speaking of sponsorships, Signals from Mars is sponsored by listeners like you and also by great sponsors. If you've got a brand, product, or service that connects with rock and metal fans, I'd love to work with you. Our audience isn't casual. They're collectors, concert goers, and gear buyers who support the bands and brands they love. Sponsorship packages start at just $150 a month and include on-air mentions, social media plugs, and even product features. If you want to connect with a loyal rock and metal audience, head on over to the sponsorship page on signalsfrommars.com to learn more. My Moby Dick reference there at the beginning of the episode. So I've had Danko scheduled several times. One time he just missed the interview altogether. Another time I had some tech issues on my end. And then another time there were tech issues on his end. So we've never been able to sync up. And with the upcoming release of Leo Rising, the new Danko Jones album that is coming out as I'm recording this, it comes out tomorrow, actually, which is when the video version of the episode will debut. This audio version comes out a week later. So the album's been out a week by the time you guys listen to this. Anyway, so when the opportunity came to interview someone from the band, I said, sure, why not? I've really got the bug for interviewing people again. It hasn't been like that for a long time, and I'm not going to say that I've interviewed a whole heap of people because I've done a total of 7 interviews this year, and they've been more or less from the late spring where I set up a bunch of things for over the summer to the last few weeks. I've been interviewing a bunch of different people to fill out content for the rest of the year. So instead of just taking weeks off, as I've done in the past, I figured I'd give you guys something. And there were a lot of people that were clamoring for interviews as well. So kind of getting back into the swing of things, and we'll be mixing things up more so than I have before. I think this discussion with Rich is really cool. We also get into performer's health, which is something that he's the founder of. And believe me, if you haven't followed me on Patreon, you'll know that I've worked a lot on mindfulness and working out and different things over the years to go from 270 all the way down to about 190, which is where I'm at right now. It's important, folks, Don't wait till it's too late to, you know, get your health in order. Anyway, enough of me blabbering. Let's get on with the episode. Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of Signals from Mars. Joining me today is Rich Knox from the band Danko Jones. Rich, how are you doing?
I'm great, man. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Awesome to have you on. So first thing I want to bring up is the first time I ever heard the name Danko Jones was during a MTV News or something like that around the year 2000. And the first thing that stood out to me was Danko saying, if you're a Kiss fan, you're either an Ace fan or a Gene fan. So
really?
Yes.
Okay.
So my question to you, being a member of the band, are you an Ace fan or a Gene fan?
I'm an Ace fan. I think Danko's like Team Paul.
Okay.
But maybe in 2000, that was the choice you had to make. But yeah, I'm going to go with Ace.
Okay.
But insider baseball. I think Danko's Team Paul.
Okay. What's your favorite interaction with Kiss or anything related with Kiss over the years?
Well, you know what, man? Though JC and Danko are both huge Kiss fans. Danko especially. I'm like a fair weather Kiss fan. I got to be honest. I hope I don't break any hearts here on the podcast.
That's cool.
But I love a lot of Kiss songs. I just never went deep into Kiss fandom as those guys had. One of my favorite interactions with Kiss is kind of a indirect interaction, and that would be our new music video. Right. For our song Diamond in the Rough. I'm probably where you're headed with this, but we hired a Kiss cover band from Gothenburg to play our song in our music video dressed up as Kiss. So I thought that was pretty funny. That was a JC's idea, but that, and yeah, like, I don't know. I mean, Kiss is great. I think they are a great band, but they're not like my favorite band.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
What was your last, I mean, to me, that video is kind of surreal seeing the whole Phantom of the Park type thing play out. For you as a musician, what was the last surreal interaction with another band?
A surreal interaction I had, I guess, is a couple of years back. This one just comes to mind. There's a few, like you just get to occasionally, you know, during festival season, you get to be side stage with people that you've looked up to forever, and you get to see those people perform the songs that you've known forever. And that in itself is surreal. But like personal interaction, a few years back, we toured the UK, a short run with The Darkness and Blackstone Cherry. And one day, Rufus, the drummer in The Darkness, was late for soundcheck. And so about a half hour before soundcheck, someone came and found me and one of their crew and said, like, hey, our drummer's going to be late for soundcheck. Do you mind sitting in and playing drums with the band? So I said, yeah, sure. I'd love to do that. And I went up to their their monitor tech and asked him what do the guys usually like work, like play during soundcheck? Because most bands like usually have a few go-to songs. Right. I knew it wouldn't be like the hit, the biggest hit, I Believe in a Thing Called Love. I knew they wouldn't be doing that. But anyway, so he gave me some and like, I've been listening to them. But anyway, I did a quick study for a half hour and then went up and like did my best Rufus impression to play along with all their stuff. And so that was pretty surreal, just being on the stage with those guys and kind of surprising them because I actually tried to learn their songs. I mean, as best I could in a half hour. Right. But I definitely, like, you know, having their heads turned back, they thought it was going to be just a total shit show and then actually knew the part. So that was like a fun moment.
Right. That's cool.
Yeah.
Being a member of Danko Jones, What are three non-negotiables that have to go into a Danko Jones song?
Three non-negotiables. Can't really... I don't know that it's ever been explicitly decided in the band, but I'm just going to shoot from the hip here. It's got to rock. There's like any ballads or slow songs in the Danko catalog over 12 albums. So any attempts to do that have kind of, you know, in hindsight have been like, maybe we should just kept it rocking. So, it's got to rock. There's got to be, at least with every album except for one, there's got to be just three drums, like snare, bass drum, and tom, and floor tom. There was one album, different drummer from the album Rock and Roll's Back, Black and Blue, and that had more drums than. But otherwise, it's the drum kit is decided at, you know, a cowbell and three drums and some cymbals, and three. You put me on the spot here, man. Three, it's probably got to reference the word rock somewhere in it. That's a dig on ourselves, but we sing about rock an awful lot because we like it.
Yeah. I think that if you're a fan of the music, there are definitely, you know, certain spices that go along with the music that help you identify that it is Danko Jones. I mean, I think you make good points. To me, the songs have to have attitude. They have to have a certain swagger to them as well, because there are some songs where you guys aren't playing, you know, straight up 4/4 or stuff like that, where there's like just a certain, like there's a certain something to the songs that they still rock, but they're not like your typical just 4/4 to the floor with the song. So I think that there's a lot of different ingredients that you guys throw in there outside of the norm that maybe if you're only listening to, I don't know, just whatever the latest single is, there are deeper cuts and there are other flavors that you guys throw in there.
Yeah, that's fair. I think anything that we do, we got, you know, it's got to go through the filter of all three of us. Right. And we all have to like what we're doing, and bands have a, you know, anytime they're writing, any band's writing something, I guess that's pretty across the board. Every band's going to love what they're doing at the time for sure. Like it's, but you're always, yeah, no one can think it's lame. Everybody's got to think it's, you know, it's fun. It's cool. And yeah, I guess like over the years, we've definitely been like either complimented or criticized to have a bit of that thing, like the AC/DC syndrome of like every song kind of sounding the same, but that's, we don't shy away from that. I think so to say like what are the three ingredients, I think it's without trying, but we're just ends up kind of like it's got to have electric guitar, like loud electric guitars, loud electric bass, and slamming drums. That's kind of, that's what that would have been a slicker answer if I had thought of that, if we could roll back the tape. But yeah, I think we've probably said enough about this, but yeah, it's us.
Okay. So that's cool. Cause I mean, you're more or less saying that the three of you have to filter everything and you have to make sure that it is presentable for the band. I mean, even though the band carries the Danko Jones name, it's important that the three of you guys have input and make sure that it's up to the standard for all three of you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally. If anybody's not feeling something, they voice it, and then we try to, you know, there can be compromises. There's three people, so you know, so there's compromises being made. But in, you know, everybody's usually comes around to the same spot. Like if something's like, you know what, this just isn't working, and then you know, all right, we'll go on to the other. You know, we come in with like 30 to 50 ideas that end up being, you know, whittled down over time or whatever. So, some just get rejected outright. Some make it almost all the way to the album, get fully demoed and everything. And then, you know, just like, we're not going to put this one on the album. So yeah, it's got to be everybody on board with every song.
Okay. So you've been with the band now for about a dozen years. Right. What was the original approach for you to join the band? Did you find that about an audition, find out about an audition, excuse me? Did they approach you? How did that all come about?
It was a mutual friend hooked us up. So a guy who actually plays in some bands in Toronto, Nick Sewell's his name, and he had like a wicked band called Biblical, the Illuminati too. Anyway, and he's also worked on one of our, a couple of our music videos, like directing them, especially like lyric videos. He's done some of the production on our videos. But anyway, Nick just messaged me. So I was playing in this other Toronto band at the time called Flash Lightning, which was like kind of a very heavy ZZ Top influence with a little bit of like Queens of the Stone Age. Look, a little bit a different flavor, but very ZZ Top. And luckily, though, like my first show with that band was videotaped because it was their album release. Okay. And so Nick had seen me in that band because we'd shared the stage a couple times with our bands. And then so he showed, luckily that was videotaped because he sent that video to JC and Danko when he heard they were looking for a drummer. And that kind of got me the audition. And then so I got an audition with the guys. So Nick just wrote me out of the blue and asked me if I'd like to join an international touring act, I think is what he said in the email. And I said, yeah, sure. And so that was that. Went an audition with the guys. I got two auditions with them. The first, like I learned all the songs, played all the parts. And then at the end, I asked like, how'd I do? And Danko told me like, it was good, man. But came out that he didn't know if I was hitting hard enough. So I said, well, give me another shot. So we had a second audition and I blew the bottom skin out of the snare drum on the second audition. And I made sure to hold up the snare drum. I'm like, oops, how'd that happen? And then, I got the gig. I went out, played a month through the States. We had playing this thing called the Uproar Tour. And it was like Alice in Chains, Coheed and Cambria, Jane's Addiction, like headlining all the amphitheaters across the United States. And we were playing like in the parking lot. There's these two like blow up portable stages. And so we're sharing the stage with like this group called Walking Papers, which has Barrett Martin and Duff McKagan playing in it. And I go from like, you know, playing bars and stuff in Toronto, small clubs, to like going up on the stage and like I'm walking on the stage and Duff McKagan's walking off the stage. Like, what the hell's going on, man? So that's kind of the story how I got in. That was like my probation period. And then after that, they're like, yeah, we like having you around. So I've been with them ever since.
Okay, cool. Was there any type of initiation or anything you had to deal with initially being the new guy?
No, there's no like sports team initiation or anything like that. It was just, I think that they just wanted to know that like any musician listening right now will know this is true. Like it was mostly, can he play the part, but is the vibe right? Can he just hang and be normal? And that's the only initiation. It was just like being on the bus and not being an idiot. And I guess I passed.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. You did some session work before working in the jazz world a little. How could you compare, or what comparisons do you have between jazz musicians and rock musicians?
That's a good question, man. They're like, the kind of gigs I was playing were very different than the rock gigs I'm playing. Like partly what took me out of playing jazz was I was playing all the time, but I was playing just the nature of the gigs you're playing are like, you play a lot of like restaurant background music. Like even if you're really good, like not saying that I was really good, but I played with some people that were really good, like the best, you know, some of the best in Canada. And even these people with me would be playing like stages to people that aren't there just to see you. Like that's just most of the gigs that I had to do to survive were that. And then, you know, the occasional like play a jazz festival or something. Jazz musicians are, both rock and jazz musicians are kind of quirky, to be honest. But jazz musicians are like a lot of the best have like are just extremely hardworking and or autistic-ish. Okay. You know, like they're just like, it's so to get that good, you just have to be so focused. And that's not everybody, like, but some of them are just like, that's a huge blanket statement that somebody's going to come rip my head off for saying that. But like, it's like a lot of hours of practicing, a lot of hours. What I found in the rock world that, yes, like some musicians are that hardworking, but a lot of it, you know, with the punk aesthetic, like you don't have to spend 8 hours a day playing the same power chord to try to get it, you know, just right. Like some people will. And, you know, that's how some bands will like totally change their sound. Like, I'm not saying that rock musicians don't practice. That's not what I'm saying. And definitely like metal musicians are kind of like the jazz musicians of the rock world. I feel like they're also practicing a lot, and you know, it's very technical. So it's, I don't know. It's different. I think like my experience, it was easy to get a little bit jaded about playing music when I was only doing like dinner gigs in the jazz world. And so I can only speak personally about that, but the rock world is more extroverted and loud, and just the nature of your shows are different. So the nature of the people that, you know, your environment changes you over time, I think too. So like, it's just a different kind of beast, but I don't know. Does that answer the question? I'm kind of just rambling.
No.
But I went deep.
I bring it up because as a kid growing up, I was a drummer myself, and my mailman was a jazz drummer. He was jazz in Prague. So if he'd ever hear me practicing, he'd always bring up how jazz and prog drummers are better than rock drummers or metal drummers. And I always got like this air of kind of superiority where they felt that, you know, they were better than rock drummers. So.
Right. Yeah. I can see how that person would have that thought. Like there's something to it. Like yes, jazz and prog drummers are better at some things than rock drummers. Rock drummers, the one thing, like you can get away with not being that great as a rock drummer, but just because of the sound that you've stumbled into or the feel that you just naturally have, you can go a long way in your career with kind of not, that's like your kind of natural looseness is what makes it cool.
Right.
And whereas jazz or prog, it's pretty like, you gotta be pretty right on, like the technique's got to be there and the timing's got to be like, there's not as much room for looseness. So that is one thing that's different. Like you can, there's lots of great rock, jazz drummers that like, if you put them on a rock kit, like it'd be interesting, but it might not sound right. Like rock. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
totally get that. The ones that kind of throw me off are like when you think about a John Bonham or a Bill Ward who were trained as jazz drummers. And then you hear like a lot of the intricacies in their playing and you're like, okay, well that shuffle or that swing that they're bringing in is definitely a jazz influence, but they're making it rock. They're more of field players than maybe, and maybe this is going to come off wrong, but I would say I enjoy them more for their feel than their technique. It isn't like a full on like jazz proficient technique, what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel the same way. I love both those drummers. And I would think that their their background is partly what informed their feel, right? You can hear in John Bonham's feel, it always feels like he's not playing the subdivisions, but I can hear it. If I listen to it, it's like he's playing in this groove with himself almost the whole time. Of course he's playing with like phenomenal, like everybody in Led Zeppelin's amazing, right?
Right,
so like hard to sound bad, but like yeah, he's obviously amazing.
Okay, so I kind of alluded to it before, your first album was Fire Music. Now with Leo Rising, has the approach changed at all with how you guys write music or go into the studio? You mentioned before how you guys just start throwing music together. I mean, is there any type of like purpose thought beforehand? Oh, well, we need to do this on this album, or I'd like to try that. Or is it, we just start to write and then whatever we feel is the best out of what we've put together is what you guys go with?
Yeah. In the end, it's that. It's like whatever came out the best, right? But there, that's like the main criteria. But I think also there's a bit of like, oh, it'd be nice to have like, if all the songs, like I said before, like songs sounding the same, like they can't sound too much the same. There's got to be like some variety of like, yeah, they all sound like Danko, but there's like different feels or different tempos or something. So like we'll make sure that there's at least a little bit of variety on the record. But it has changed because when I first joined the band, we all lived in Toronto. Now I live, Danko still lives in Toronto. I live in Prince Edward Island, which is on the east coast of Canada. JC lives in Finland. So that changes the dynamic of the writing. So we'll still get together once or twice a year. Like we'll tack on some days or a week, depending, like in between shows. So if we have like, we've done it a few times where you play the one weekend and you don't play again till the next weekend, but we'll just stay in a city and rent a spot and write. But otherwise it's kind of using the internet for good. It's like Danko writing riffs, sending them to JC as a, like a primary filter. And then JC coming up with some arrangements, sending them to me. I'll put drums down on them. So a lot of the ideas get made like that. And then, you know, they kind of go through the furnace, like when we get together and see if they hold up when we play them live, or if, you know, if something, anything changes to them there, or then there's some songs that we still kind of write old school, like as together in the room spontaneously or coming in with a riff or whatever. So it's, but when we first started, it was all like, we just get in the jam space and start like, okay, we're in writing mode now. So just coming in with like five different ideas to try a day, and then something spontaneous or two spontaneous ideas a day. And then, you know, they're together for 3 or 4 hours and then come back the next day, try again. So it has changed, the, like the technology's changed and where we live has changed, but the approach to the, how, like what needs to be on the record, not really. I think it's all kind of, there might be a bit of like, I really like that song on the last record. I'd like to write something again like it, kind of like a big anthemic thing or something. But like, I think it's, yeah, it's not like we're like getting too technical, like writing out a spreadsheet and being like, need one of these. But I think it's just in the back of our minds.
Yeah, I think there are plenty of bands doing that. Luckily, you guys aren't. Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got bands that got that one radio hit and they need to include that like B or C version of that song on each one of their albums. So
yeah, for sure. I mean, I get it. If it worked for you and people like it, you kind of want to give the people what they want. But at the same time, if it's not coming from the right place, it just doesn't, it's not going to land. And that special sauce is hard to find.
Yeah.
The best of times. So yeah,
well, could you imagine doing a show like that where every song is like the same tempo, or they all more or less sound the same, because you're trying to recapture whatever magic that, you know, as you said, the special sauce that won that award a million years ago.
It's not I agree, that would be a terrible show to be at or to play.
Off of Leo Rising surprised you after finally getting to hear the album?
What surprised me? That's cool. There's a few songs that I don't know if anything surprised me, but there's a few that I really like. I like, I Love It Louder. I knew I was going to like that song, but the more I hear it, the more I like it, which is coming out. I think it's, well, I mean, the album's coming out November 21st. So if this podcast drops, I think maybe that day or around that day, you can listen to it. But that's a little bit different for us. That's just the feel of that song is a little bit different. And I really like it. I think it's still us. It's still rock, but it's more, I don't know. It's more of a, I don't know, story. It's not even telling a story. I don't know, but you'll see what I mean when you hear it. It's kind of more like a storytelling song. I don't know. It's I like it. And that one and yeah. I don't know. Not too much surprised me because we kind of know what we're going to do when we get into the studio. It's just, but when I get there, it's just about execution, really. Like, just can I play the parts? You know, they're pretty well set what I'm going to do. And that's just about trying to play them. And then I always leave a bit of room for the fills to be a bit different too. Like, that's the only thing that I don't really have set in stone. There's certain fills like, yeah, I'll definitely do that there, but I'll kind of different every take. I'll do probably a different fill in a section or something to try to beat the last one and just see if I can come up with something cooler. I don't know if you like were like that as a drummer too, but sometimes I just feel like I'm literally just throwing something at the wall, like see if this that's lands. And sometimes you get you know you're happy with what comes out. I guess maybe thinking about it for another second, having Marty Friedman play on it, that was a surprise because that was one thing that didn't we didn't know what he was going to play. We just knew it was going to be awesome, and so that was cool. Like when we got that email, because at that point I'd already laid down my stuff. I'd come back to PEI, and then the email came like, here's what it sounds like with Marty's parts. And so that was like really, really, really lifted the song. And so that was cool. Yeah, that was a surprise because I didn't know what he was going to do.
You guys knew beforehand that he was going to be involved in the album, or that's something that just came up while you guys were recording?
I think, yeah, I can't remember. I think it might have been like around the time we were recording that we just like thought like, hey, man, let's ask Marty if he'd be into it. And so, yeah, it wasn't like premeditated for a long time. I think it just like, it was probably in a discussion that like, I don't remember exactly how it happened, but I think it was like, this would sound awesome with like really ripping guitar. Who could we ask? And then, oh, do you think Marty would want to? I don't know. Let's ask him. And then he was into it. So that was like, yeah, it's pretty awesome.
That's cool. Yeah. Yeah. When I saw that, I'm like, wow, they got Marty Friedman to play on this. And then as I was thinking about it, you know, as we started the interview, he's a huge fan of a lot of the same bands that kind of fueled what you guys do. So it makes sense.
Yeah. Yep. It's, I mean, yeah. I mean, he's such a legend and yeah, it's just cool that it does fit, but it's just, we're very happy and, you know, feel lucky that he'd want to do it. So yeah, it's very cool.
So you mentioned before how the band is known for the drummers being minimalist when it comes to their drum sets. There's even up on Wikipedia, there's a picture of you with just a floor tom, bass drum, snare, hi-hat, ride, and I don't remember if it's one or two cymbals. So yeah. My question is, what's the smallest drum set you've played on? And what's the biggest you've played on?
The smallest? Well, I mean, this one's pretty small. I guess I've played this. I mean, I've played on this kit for years. It hasn't got much smaller than this. Like back when I was doing all those jazz gigs, there'd be time when I just have a bass drum and a snare drum and a ride cymbal and a hi-hat. That'd be pretty, you know, that'd be usual. Or maybe even not a ride. Maybe just like, you know, there's like, if over the years you play so many different kinds of shows and stuff, or I have. And so, you know, there's sometimes like you're playing on one of those, like, I think it's called a cajon, like the box thing. Yeah. Like I've done that, or like I definitely prefer the drum set to that. Like I, for one, it kills my hands, and two, like I just feel weird. I'm bent over while the guys are rocking. Right. But we've had to do that for like a couple of like acoustic, you know, you're like playing a radio thing or something, and it's acoustic, and so that's what I've ended up with. That, or like a, just a snare drum on, like there was this bootlegger that used to be in operation here in PEI, and everybody on Tuesday nights they'd all go to this place. It's in this small fishing village, and like musicians from all over the island would go. And so I started going like as a 18-year-old, and I'd just bring a snare drum and a pair of brushes, and you're kind of playing like everything from like kind of the Celtic tunes, which is like big here, and just like, and then covers or whatever. But so I guess that's probably the smallest thing I've ever played on, but that's not like a professional gig. But the biggest, I don't know. I mean, I bought my, well, my dad bought it for me. This, like, it's got like 5 or 6 toms, and it doesn't have 2 bass drums, but like the double kick and a bunch of cymbals. And it's this Yamaha Power V. So I think it was like when like they were made in England for a couple of years. So it's like, it's not like the nicest Yamaha kit, but anyway, I set it up and got all new heads for it. And I was like messing around on that for a while, which is like, yeah, I mean, super fun. I almost don't know what to do with it because I've played like, even before Danko, I was like, I just had one more tom. I was like kind of like that John Bonham was, you know, I know sometimes you'd use the 2 toms, but like I was just like rack and floor tom, and that was it. Like John Bonham was my guy. Mm-hmm. So I was just, or like even Elvin Jones or whatever, like all the jazz, coming from the jazz world, is like 2 cymbals and 2 toms and a snare. So yeah, when I get on a big kit, I honestly don't know what to do with it. It's like playing, like just pretending I'm in Iron Maiden for a minute. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, so it's, yeah. I haven't played that many big kits, to be honest.
Okay. And what can you tell us about PerformersHealth.com?
Yeah, well, Performers Health is something I started born out of my own health journey and just trying to stay fit on the road and, you know, happy and healthy, both being important things as a musician, because there's a lot of downtime and a lot of just different kind of stresses and whatever than, you know, other jobs, just the nature of the business. So I was born out of that. It's fitness and wellness programming for primarily for musicians and anybody, any artist really, that kind of has like a, I don't want to say an oddball job, but not your regular 9-to-5. Yeah, I've been working mostly with one-on-one clients so I can set up anything from like nutrition protocols or like, you know, I'm not like diagnosing your diabetes or something like that, but like I can help you find a way to eat healthier in your specific circumstances, like if you're on the road or your home or whatever, just kind of gently guide you into healthier eating or developing fitness plans or working with you to improve your mindset too about your work and being on stage and stuff like that. So yeah, it's just it's a one-man operation at this point, and it's kind of like my personal passion project. I really started getting serious about it during the pandemic when I couldn't do anything and was stuck at home. And so I'd been going to the gym for a year. Like I've kind of always gone to the gym and was a runner and stuff like that. So I just kind of formalized my education and decided to put my, what do you call it? Like hang up your shingle, put your shingle, I don't know. Hanging up your shingles when you're done, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
I don't know, whatever. Anyway, whatever. The opposite of that, put my shingle out. And yeah. So it's going all right. I had a little, an app at one point called Fit Drummers, which was like, just kind of what it sounds like, fitness for drummers specifically. And then I just kind of got busy and, took it down because I wasn't paying much attention to it, but, seen some other people are kind of entering that world too now, like fitness for drummers and stuff like that. So it's cool to see, but, yeah, I hope to pick it back up more. But if anybody's interested, just go and drop me a line. If you're thinking about improving your health in any way, and I'll see if I can guide you personally or guide you in the right direction.
Cool. Yeah. I wanted to bring it up because I'm somebody who, in the last 4 years kind of turned my health around, due to working on mindfulness, working on my diet, getting cool. exercise in. I went from being 270 to somewhere around 190, which I am right now.
Wicked, yeah. Man.
So definitely it's, you know, as you know, something that you have to continuously work on.
Yeah.
And so when I saw that, when I was preparing for the interview, I was like, I got to ask him because, you know, there's a lot of things that I think cross over, and I wanted to make sure to be able to give you a shout out about that and, you know, give you a platform to talk about it.
Thanks, man. Well, congrats to you on that. That's huge. It takes a huge amount of work and just a decision too. That's cool that you got to that point where I was like, yeah, I'm going to take care of this. And yeah, as you know, like it, sometimes it's like getting the snowball. Sometimes it's hard starting it and getting it up the hill, but then, you know, you do get some momentum with it and you start to feel like you miss it if you don't get your walk in or your workout or your meditation in or whatever. But yeah, thanks for giving me the opportunity. I mean, anybody that's listening, if that's something that's been on your mind, I mean, you're a great example of what can happen, and really just, you know, you can start small and it will expand, you know, like exponentially. So yeah, give me a call or just, I don't know, give you a call or just, you know, just there's lots of resources out there. Yeah. So, but I think it's super important, especially in the music industry, because, you know, it's like for a long time, and even to this day, like there's the you know, just when people think of musicians, what they think of, it's like getting loaded and busting up hotel rooms and stuff. And that's like a cool story. Those are cool stories. And they're like, mm-hmm. it's fun, like romantic ideas of like what it is to be a rock star and whatever. But that shit catches up with you. And, you know, it doesn't, like, you don't want to be just feeling crappy all the time. Yeah. Like, you know, you want to feel good. And yeah. So anyway, rant over, but thanks for asking me, man.
Yeah, no problem. And since you brought up the pandemic, I got to see there was a live stream that you guys did, right when the pandemic happened. And I'm in Europe, so I was up at like 1 or 2 in the morning. I forget what it was, and watched that whole thing live. And it was just such a kind of a surreal thing, because you guys did the question and answer afterwards as well. And you could tell that the mood was just kind of, you guys were kind of on edge. You know, there was so much uncertainty with what was going on. So that was really like coming off, like the performance was great, but afterwards it just, there was something weird about the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, what are your memories of that?
Yeah. Now that you mentioned, I haven't thought about that in a long time, but yeah, it like, frig, man, like that time it was like a black hole of time, right? Like, I feel like in some ways, like I'm starting to come around to like remembering it's like 2025 and, you know, but like even last year, it felt like, I don't know about you, but like, it felt like it was 2020 a minute ago. And then all of a sudden, but like, no, wait, it's 4 years later. Like it like there was just a gap in time, but yeah, everybody that was talking about it the other day. And it's just, that was just a shitty time, man. Like that's the understatement of the year. But you know, aside from everybody that, you know, lost their life from it or like got like permanent lung damage or whatever, like just to, it just upended everybody's life in a shitty way. And it was just, people, I felt like people coped as best they could. Like, you know, I don't know if like some people maybe, I don't know, like could argue that they thrived or made certain like positive life choices that were afforded them. Like I moved cities during the pandemic. Like, that was one of the big life moves I made. And I think a lot of people made big life moves because it just like totally screwed up the rhythm of life. Like anything you had going on, not everybody, but like musicians for sure. And so, yeah, I think if you, referencing that, those question and answers, like you got to see, like everyone was curious, like, what are you guys doing? Cause everybody was like, what is everybody doing? And like, yeah, we had like a variety of responses, you know, from like, I think JC started running during the pandemic, and like, but it wasn't like that, you know, it wasn't like healthy habits for everybody. Some people just got like, went dark and so I don't know. My memories are like, kind of this like a little, not like super frightened at the beginning, but you just thought it was going to end right quick. And then, you know, you're kind of like on getting on Zoom calls with all your friends and you're hanging out and you're buying, making food at home and probably gained a quick 10 pounds just because you're like not moving and you're like drinking or like just eating crap. And then it just kind of, those stops and starts were just like, I mean, you gotta move. You gotta have purpose to your day. And that like just took that out of me for sure. And it was, I filled the gap with like the performance health studying and just like getting into other things. It's like, I gotta have a goal, something I gotta do. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it wasn't good, man. I don't know. Yeah. It was a shit time. There was nothing cool. There was nothing cool about the pandemic. Yeah. Some cool things came out of it, but it was, fuck, it wasn't good. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where should people go to keep up with you and the band?
Yeah. So you can go, DankoJones.com is the best place to, like, you know, get information on shows and music. You can find us on all the streaming platforms, Apple Music and Spotify, YouTube, music. And, you know, we have videos on YouTube, Instagram. I think it's Danko_Jones. It'll be really obvious which one is him. And then if there's any fakes, you know, it'll be pretty obvious because it'll be the one with the most followers. I'm Rich Knox Drums. And yeah, that's, I think it's, Calibre's John, I think is what it is, or Calibre's J is JC's Instagram. So yeah, we're on Instagram all the time. That's kind of our, I think everybody's, you know, we don't do all the, like everything like TikTok and everything, but we've chosen that one. And that's where you can reach out to us or just check out what we're doing.
Okay.
And then of course, performershealth.com. Sure. Since you brought it up. That's if anybody's interested in the health stuff, hit me up.
Okay, cool. And where should people go if they want to buy Leo Rising? Is there a specific site that they can go to or a specific store which guarantees that the most amount of money gets back into the pockets of the members of the band?
I think the best place to get a Leo Rising album is probably at a show. But if you can't get to a show, then just go to the Danko Jones website and order from there. And that would be the best way to get one. Failing that, go to a local record store. Got to support our local record stores too. But yeah, the show is if you can come to our show, that'd be the bee's knees.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Rich, I want to thank you for your time. Been a great deal of fun talking to you and
you too.
Yeah. The door is always open for you to come back or anyone from the band. I mentioned to the PR person, I've had Danko scheduled 3 times and I've never spoken to him. There's always been something, either tech malfunction, someone's forgotten an interview, or there's always been something. So we've never been able to make it work. So when I saw that the album was being promoted, I said, is there any way to finally, you know, I'm like, this is like my white whale here. You know, this is Moby Dick for me. Can I finally get Danko Jones? And I said, well, he doesn't do many podcasts. So I'm like, all right, well, I'll speak to anyone from the band. So.
Oh, cool, man. Well, thanks for having me. And I'm glad somebody connected. We finally got connected to one of us anyway.
Yeah, there you go.
It's been a pleasure, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you for listening to the Signals from Mars podcast. You can subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.